at the age of 8, I walked in on my dad watching football and just started asking him a bunch of questions. Bunch of questions, and he was a Broncos fan, still is a Broncos fan to this day. And so for me, I told him, I want to be a running back for the Broncos. And he said, are you sure? And I was like, absolutely. And so literally the next, I guess, time to register for football, he got me in, and it was, I was ready to go from there. So yeah, I grew up with my room being blue and orange.
Welcome to the Athletes Doing Good podcast. We are very excited to welcome Monty Ball today. At the peak of his powers, he was a star running back for the Wisconsin Badgers, a Heisman finalist in 2011, setting records and getting drafted by the Denver Broncos, growing up in Kansas and kind of moving around the Midwest. Football, the passion always followed him wherever he went. We're so grateful to have you on today.
No, thank you for having me. It's always an honor when folks want to reach out and just hear how you're doing. And so I really appreciate the consideration and thank you for welcoming me.
Well, we're super excited to have you. Was NFL always your dream?
Always my dream. The dream came about when I was 8 years old. So I was born in Kansas, Missouri. I was born in McPherson, Kansas. And I lived there only like 2 years of my life. And so then from there, I've moved to Missouri. It's been 16 years of my life there. And before, obviously, that I, at the age of 8, I walked in on my dad watching football and just started asking him a bunch of questions, And he was a Broncos fan, still is a Broncos fan to this day. And so for me, I told him, I want to be a running back for the Broncos. And he said, are you sure? And I was like, absolutely. And so literally the next, I guess, time to register for football, he got me in, and it was, I was ready to go from there. So yeah, I grew up with my room being blue and orange all the way up through high school to before I left for college.
Speaking into existence.
Literally, when I was drafted, I tweeted out a photo of when I was 8 years old wearing a Broncos jersey.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, Broncos was on your list. Were the Badgers always on your list?
Ooh, actually, no, I wasn't. I watched a lot of NFL as a child. And then my adolescent years, I watched a little bit of college, but still it was just so heavy NFL. Whenever I received an offer from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, I took an official visit there. I actually had no idea like what was there. Of course, I was one of those folks who thought just cows, cheese, hair. Didn't even know it was an isthmus. And so long story short, after Googling it and looking up images and having the opportunity to visit, it was a done deal. It was a night game against Ohio State. You know what I mean? And it was 89 to 90,000, 95,000 fans. And I was like, this is the stage I want to play on.
Who did you look up to? Who was your favorite player growing up in the NFL?
Terrell Davis. He was running back for the Broncos. Yes. So yeah, he was my idol growing up. Even on the other side of the, my living room here, on the other side, I have a photo of me and him. My first day meeting him after practice, and my smile is so big.
That is awesome.
It is. Well, you definitely have, you are, like you said earlier, you're an open book. And I think that's something that's so neat about who you are and your story and your journey. And playing football at such a young age and just the toll it takes on your body throughout high school, college, and then into the NFL, you know, what was it like dealing with that?
It's a lot. It's hindsight, of course, is a powerful tool because when you're actually living through it, you don't really understand what it is that you're putting your body through in your mind. But looking back, of course, I've been able to obviously see how I've been how I was stressing myself out, how I wasn't taking care of my body, how I wasn't putting the right things in my body. And of course, that led to the derailments, me derailing myself, I guess, jumping off this train, I was going to crash once I got into the NFL. But for me, it was just stressful managing that student athlete life with obviously being a, you know, the poster child for a program. And of course, I knew what I signed up for to a certain extent, but for me, I didn't know what it was that I was struggling with, and that being developing a strong relationship with alcohol in college, that helped me to go out into public. So suffering from that social anxiety, dream anxiety, and then just drowning it with alcohol, creating this slippery slope into depression, and then of course putting my body physically through a lot of strain.
I think, since you've been so very open with everything that you went through, you published a memoir. You talked about, you going in and doing the work and getting help for alcohol addiction. So often we think of athletes and we think it's the life, the attention, the accolades, but people don't truly understand, like you talked about, your social anxiety, the pressure that's put on athletes, what's going on, and all that goes on kind of behind the scenes. They see the attention, the good, the glam. How would you coaching up, athletes that are starting, what would you tell them to be able to help them navigate better than you did?
Absolutely. I think it's important for one to have a support system. For me, it was my family. Of course, they moved from Missouri to Madison, Wisconsin, my freshman year in college. It was always a plan of ours once I turned 12 or 13 or 14 that if I'm going to continue to excel at the sport, they will sacrifice whatever they need to continue to support me. And so for me, I had my family as a support system, but I really didn't lean on them as much as I should have, right? And so for me, the messaging that I would share with youth and student athletes as well is you have to lean on your support system. And if you don't have one, then you have to figure out how to create one, right? Or to figure out how to create a support system and actually lean on this support system because it's going to become difficult. You're going to face stressors. You're going to face times where you don't want to do what it is that you're doing. And you just need that safety net. You need somebody to lean on, a shoulder to cry on, someone to go grab coffee with and be vulnerable with. And so for me, I always talk about that support system. And then, of course, utilizing the resources that are there for you on campus or there for you in your community. There are a million ways up the hill, right? Towards recovery, whatever that may be, not even from a substance, from whatever it may be, trauma, et cetera, a million ways up that hill. And for me, I think for myself, of course, what worked for me is therapy. So I'm a huge advocate for that. I believe everyone should have a therapist. And so I preach that as well, whether it be you going into therapy or creating this group of guys or gals where you can be vulnerable and sort of have those sessions. So for me, I just find that to be important. Essentially, just creating this environment, this ecosystem for yourself, a healthy escape from the stressors that you're dealing
I love when they say now, like, it's okay to not be okay. Because I
Yeah.
don't think, probably when you were in college, back when I was in college, that wasn't said. And
No.
people, I think, internalized it more. And so I love that that statement is out there more. And I love that there's more awareness about mental health, about addiction, and truly helping to reduce that stigma. Because so many of us deal with it.
Yeah, a lot of people. And obviously, yeah, speaking from the student athlete standpoint, it's from the sport. And as for me, I was never one to blame anything or any one of my mistakes. I made the decisions that I made, and I deserved the scrutiny and the condemnation that I received. And so I always share that part. But part of the story also is growing up as a student athlete, pretty much my entire life, up until the age of 25, it was always taught, right, especially from the game of football, of don't show your opponent that you're sweating, don't show your opponent that you're bleeding, don't cry, show your father how strong you are. And so for me, I had that relationship with my dad. Like, I wanted to show him how manly I am, how masculine I am on the football field. And so we developed that relationship, and I sort of just took off from it and didn't really have the avenues to be vulnerable, but alcohol allowed for me to open up to my friends and be vulnerable, and it felt good at the time. It felt good, which, as we know, that addiction can trick you like that. And so, yeah, I don't want to. I know you guys have questions. I can go on forever, but
Oh,
One heck of a journey. One heck of a journey.
Yeah. I think, I mean, too, coming to a state like Wisconsin, who's known for their drinking habits, is probably, will probably just intensify everything. And it was very hard. Like, how did you differentiate when it was just something you used to relax versus like, it's starting to become a problem in my life?
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that as well. When I moved to Madison at the age of 18, I would say in high school, I experimented with alcohol 7 or 8 times in high school. And then when I got to Wisconsin, it was, I immediately noticed that alcohol is advertised differently. It's advertised differently, and it's more socially acceptable as it being a social norm to cope with it being cold, cope with for me, it was a cultural shock in a sense. And then, you know, adding that with just not having the tools, right? Not having the tools, really not at all. For me, it was to go in, obviously keep my grades up and be eligible to play the sport that I love. And I didn't focus on anything else. I didn't create a plan for how am I going to manage stress? How are you going to manage stress? Because it's inevitable. It's going to happen. Now, how are you going to manage it? And so when I go about speaking to youth or teens, whatever that may be, I stress that so heavily where it's create a plan for what you're going to do when you get stressed, when you catch yourself laying in bed, you know, for 48 hours, like when you're going down that slippery slope, you're going down that tunnel of just having, you know, some depression or whatever it may be, what are you going to do?
I love that plan. I think now you're a clinical outreach manager. You're dedicating your life to others, you know, that have been part of that journey. What made you decide to do that? And what has the experience been like?
Yeah, I love the questions. So my older sister, there's a huge, she's my role model. Love her to death. She is a clinical psychologist. She owns 2 practices. Right now she lives in Virginia and she provides psychotherapy for military families on the basis. And so growing up, she diagnosed me with alcoholism at age like 15 at the dinner table. And I was like, nah. And she was like, okay, give it a couple years. But I bring her up because she's just a huge motivator. So obviously once everything came crumbling down for me, I was like, you know, I want to do something with this, right? I don't want to just disappear and let that be the final chapter of my journey. That's not what it's supposed to be. And so for me, my goal has always been to turn this around and to use this as a positive to help others, right? So I'm a believer in a higher power, and I believe that this sport was given to me to create a stage, right? To talk about something way greater than myself, something that I struggle with, and something that a lot of people, if not everyone, struggles with directly or indirectly. And that being, you're either suffering from a substance use disorder or someone you love suffering from a substance use disorder, or you lost someone. And so as a clinical outreach manager, for me, I have the opportunity of speaking with families, literally face-to-face, speaking with families about, for one, obviously all that we can provide them with substance use disorder treatment, but of course, providing them with resources in the community as well. So I have to be knowledgeable about what programs are in the entire state of Colorado, which is where I live now. And just making sure that I am a resource for not only families, but a resource for other providers in the community as well, if they're struggling with finding placement for a client. And so it's been a remarkable journey for me because I want to continue down this journey because I eventually want to start my own treatment facility.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I love that. I bet you're impacted on a day-to-day basis.
I would not be where I'm at today, honestly, if it wasn't for, like I said, the support system, even to Badger fans, right, of still sticking in my corner. And I always share this with folks. Like, I get it. I understand that people don't like me, preconceived notions, and I respect that. I really do. But it's I always harp on, like, what do you expect for me to do? I had 78 plus hours of therapy. I even went to intensive outpatient treatment, 8 years sober from alcohol. And now spending my time giving back to the community. And so I turned this around and I'm going to keep doing it.
I think it's so interesting to you just look at your whole story in general. You're doing such amazing things that, you know, it's incredible what you've done. And I just can't wait to see where you continue to go with it. If you had to go back and if you could change anything, would you? or are you happy with the outcome that has happened?
Of course, I would change. The obvious thing that I would change, we all know what that would be. Of course, things happen the way that they do. It's unfortunate. But of course, I would love to change that because in order to be where I'm at today, I didn't have to create trauma for someone else, right? And I struggled so long of forgiving myself for that, for a very long time, actually. I would say within the last 24 months, I finally got over it. Very long time. But for me, I would change that situation, and I would have listened to the folks who tried to pull me to the side and said, hey, look, you have a severe drinking problem. We can tell that you're not the same person when you're under the influence. And a lot of my friends say that to me. They'll be like, look, you are a very kind dude. You're awesome. You're great. But when you get under the influence, you're not the same person. And so I wish I would have listened. I wish I would have listened.
Yeah. We ask everybody that's on our podcast, what does Athletes Doing Good mean to you?
What is it? I'm sorry, what was your question?
What does Athletes Doing Good mean to you?
Oh, I think it's transitioning. That's the first word that comes in my head. Because for athletes, it's we eat, breathe, sleep, dream, and live the sport that we are playing. And so the first word that pops in my head when I hear that is transitioning. Like, what are you doing now? Once that door has closed. And of course, if their athletes are still playing, you know, what are you planning to do once that door closes? Because it's going to close. Father Time is going to make sure that our bodies get too old to perform. But so for me, I think when I think of athletes doing good, it's you know what, use the stage that you have, right? You have youth that look up to you and show them that when that door does close on the sport that you love to play, use what you have to give back to the community. Give back to the community.
I love that. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. We truly appreciate it and can't wait to highlight all the wonderful things you're doing.
No, I really appreciate this. Again, it's humbling. It's an honor. And thank you so much for the consideration. And I love the JJ Watt jersey back there.